It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 20th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, the popular behavior tracking software company ClassDojo announced that it would change its policies about holding on to student information, said it would keep performance information about kids for only a year and then delete it. And there's a new report out today from a group called the Data Quality Campaign. It looks at the growth in student data collection around the country. Our Marketplace colleague Adrian Hill at our Learning Curve desk has more. Adrian, how are you?
I'm well, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what do we know about the way states are collecting data on school kids?
Well, as we've talked about before, there are what are called longitudinal data systems to track students throughout their school career. And what we see in this study today is that a lot of states have started committing local money for these data systems.
What are the states doing with all this data?
19 states actually link up a kid's school data with what happens once they graduate, their workforce data. In 17 states, parents can track their kids' data, watch their progress over time. So they're doing all sorts of things with the data they're gathering, but educators tell me they're still swimming in data that's not getting used.
Is this changing? Are we being better about leveraging this data that we're collecting?
Well, again, according to the study out from the Data Quality Campaign, across the country now, 18 states are spending money to improve educators' data literacy skills. And this is important. So we make sure that educators understand when it makes sense to turn to data and when it doesn't make sense, when we should not connect your college career to your thigh bone.
So how are states dealing with the privacy and security issues here? I mean, this sounds slightly terrifying to me. So how are we dealing with this?
This year, I'm going to let you wrap your head around this number. 110 bills have come up in state legislatures trying to come up with ways to sort of put security, safety first when it comes to student data.
Can you give me a specific example of the kind of data we're talking about here? Are we talking about how well I did in social studies? Give me some specific examples.
Typically, it'd be things like test scores, attendance, behavior. Those things might be in the system. Some states do collect GPA. They might have information about what courses you've taken and passed. So it's really a state-by-state kind of thing.
But nothing that details the things inside my locker, right?
I have not come across that yet, Ben. Those things are private and safe.
Adrian Hill, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
We've heard in recent days about how Taylor Swift's people want to sell old-fashioned albums, how BitTorrent is going legit on behalf of artists, and how YouTube is getting its own streaming service. Now, more news that fits in that folder, or should I say operating system. According to the Financial Times, a Beats subscription music streaming service could come preloaded in iOS as early as next year. As you may remember, Apple bought Beats for $3 billion last spring. We'll keep you posted. From acquisitions to partnerships, Yahoo and Firefox maker Mozilla have announced a strategic 5-year deal. The plan is if you're using the Firefox browser, guess which search engine is the default? Yahoo. Firefoxers in the U.S. can start Yahooing next month. Here's a phrase I admittedly did not know existed, keepsake password. As a secret string of characters and numbers, our passwords can go from the dangerously banal to the strangely revealing. New York Times investigative reporter Ian Urbina has a piece in this coming weekend's New York Times Magazine about keepsake passwords, and he joins me now to talk about them. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Why are you so intrigued by keepsake passwords?
I guess I was intrigued because I've always thought of passwords as really tedious. And what surprised me about them was that there's almost a subspecies of passwords that are fascinating and often have really rich backstories to them.
They're revealing, right? What can you learn about somebody, I don't know, other than their email history or bank account balance when you know their password?
So for some people, they're motivational, and maybe it's the time you want to run in the half marathon or a reminder to quit smoking or to call your mom. Other ones, though, were more poignant. They captured something painful.
Almost like a tattoo of a dead friend's name or something.
Yeah, sort of a homage to something lost.
One of the stories that you talk about is this woman who learns that her son was gay after he committed suicide, and she found out because of his password.
Yeah, so this was someone I met at the park, and we started talking about this story. And she told me that after her son committed suicide, she was going through his desk. She came across his password, which was Lambda69. Mm-hmm. And she got on Google and started reading up and realized that Lambda is a common symbol for gay liberation. And 1969 is a year that marks the Stonewall riots, a famous moment in gay history.
Sure.
Sort of slowly dawned on her that her son had been gay and she had not known. And it was sort of this painful epiphany.
Were you surprised that so many people were willing to share their passwords with you?
I really was. And it was sort of the marvel that traveled with me throughout, that people were willing to open up, even if they know that they have to go home right away and change it. But they seemed to like to give their story because it was this emotional, irrational gesture, sort of thumbing their nose at all the pent-up fear about internet security.
Ian Urbina is an investigative reporter for The New York Times. Ian, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, what's a keepsake password that you no longer use? Give me the old stuff, the stuff that has no relation to your current passwords. I'll start. Galoshes was the name of an old cat long since laid to rest, named for his white paws. Tweet yours to me. I'm at the Brock Johnson. And that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.